Last case is In Re Raymond Rivera and Carl Neuberger, 2009-11-23. Mr. Collins, we're ready when you are.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court. The technology we're dealing with here are wound magnet rolls, basically an arts and crafts device, wound up. And one of the problems with these is when you put adhesive on one side, you can stick it to a sticker. You roll it up, it wants to stick to the other side.
And
so for years...
Your problem is all the pieces are in the prior art, right?
The pieces are... The elements are cited by the examiner, a lot of the elements of the prior art.
And the Supreme Court has spoken in KSR and told us that in such a case, there's usually a presumption of obviousness.
I don't believe they said there's usually presumption of obviousness. They said that there's an apparent reason that must be made of the evidence.
They even
of the
decided
record.
KSR in summary judgment without sending it back.
Well, I understand how KSR was decided, but the ruling of KSR, the holding of KSR, is still there's no rigid application of the TSM test, but there still must be an apparent reason for the combination. And part of our argument also is some of the references teaches away and some of the, you know, quote unquote, prior art cited by the board really isn't prior art at all. And where I'd like to start off with is on that issue. One of the issues raised in the rejection is the, really the combination is this JP234 reference, also called Takashima, which has a self-wound magnet with a release layer on the back. It's a different approach to it. Then there's Young, which is a PCT application, which has a release layer with a silicone release agent. And an acrylate group, an adhesion promoter. Then the third reference is Sartimer 9051. CD 9051 is a specific Sartimer formulation, and Sartimer is relied upon as the adhesion enhancer. And on the issue of Sartimer, really there were two more references, and I use the term reference a little bit loosely. One is the board relied upon what it alleged to be an admission by the applicant. And we submit the reliance on that admission was actually quite wrong. What the board found was that the admitted prior...
But these are all prior art. You've questioned really almost whether they're prior art, but they are prior art, right?
Well,
you're questioning what they say.
No, yes and no, because the board found the admitted prior art to be more than it was. What was admitted by the applicant and really never disputed is that Sartimer CD 9051 existed. It was out there. The board found further that it was known for use on magnetic substrates. And that's a huge distinction because the applicants never said that. The applicant's exact language actually was, it is useful, an adhesion enhancer is useful to promote the adherence of the release coating layer on the magnetic substrate. That's not an admission that it was known to use Sartimer for that purpose by others. It's a recognition of the applicant's invention that the applicant determined it to be useful on that. And that really, when that leg on the table, that is the prior art rejection, is pulled out from under it, that was a critical reasoning on why the board thought it would be obvious to use Sartimer.
Now they've got ZU. How do you pronounce it? ZU?
ZU, I believe, is how it's pronounced, but spelled XU. The other issue...
And ZU says 9012 works on plastics.
No, actually, you got to consider the issue of analogous prior art, too. For a piece of prior art to be considered analogous under this court's precedent in In Re Clay, for example, there's a two-part test. It either has to be in the same field of endeavor. Well, that's clearly not an issue here. We're dealing with a wound magnet for an arts and crafts purpose. ZU is directed to an optical waveguide. And Sartimer CD 9051 is one of maybe 50 different compositions it notes for controlling the refractive index between layers of an optical waveguide. So it's clearly not in the same field of endeavor. The second part of the test is, would it be...
If an applicant puts in issue the question, say, specific question of whether 9012 will work on plastic as the enhancer, then why isn't the examiner entitled to look at literature about 9012 to see what it does work on?
The question would be, though, how does one get to solder a CD9051? There's got to be some apparent reason someone would make the combination.
It's sort of like, you know, if you Google, you know, 9021 and said, does it work on plastic? Zoom's going to pop up, you know, right away.
Therein lies the problem. That, I respectfully submit, is hindsight. If the examiner sits down and Googles CD9051, he's already made the determination that it should be in the rejection. He's made the determination that the combination has been made.
Yeah, why wouldn't it have been obvious to try 9012 anyhow? I mean, basically the reference has got a whole slew of these applications, and they say this stuff works on plastics, metal, glass, and other substrates.
Are you referring to Sartimer's reference at all? Actually, it's specified for metals. And it's specified, and if you look at the characteristics that Sartimer's CD9051, assuming someone would have referred to it in the first place, right? That's sort of the hindsight question, is once you put the combination together, it sure looks obvious in the past. But it's designed for metal, and its characteristics are water resistance.
9051, right?
9051. And it's water resistance, which frankly for this application, nobody cares about. When you've put the picture on the front of the magnet, and you put the magnet on the fridge, the release layers apply the face on the fridge. It's, if you get water running down the front of your fridge, you get a lot bigger problems.
But 9051 doesn't say use it on metal only.
Actually, that's the specification. I believe it's for metal uses.
9051 is a trifunctional version of 9050. Okay, 9050 talks about metals. I got you.
That is correct. So it's really teaching. It's something for adhering coatings to metal. As you can imagine, most metal structures, a lot of them are outside. Water resistance is one characteristic which has no bearing on some kind of magnetic
stick. Just to help me out, assume that you lose on Zoo. I mean, your argument is that it was improper for the board to consider Zoo.
Mm-hmm.
If you lose on Zoo, then what's your response to the presiding judge's initial thrust to say that the combination, then if you lose on Zoo, then all the elements in the claim are in the art.
Right. I guess if I lose on Zoo or the question of the issue of the admission.
Well, let's say you win on admissions and you lose on Zoo. So then we've got all the elements of the invention are in the prior art.
Right. The one great thing about that, the one issue here, though, is what you end up doing is going back to a rejection that the examiner already withdrew. And from this CCPA case in Ray Margolis, a rejection that the examiner had considered, withdrew
responding
below.
Responding to the presiding judge's question would be just a preliminary what will happen to the next appeal. Because if we remand it, on the grounds that there was an error in process here, that's one of your arguments, is it's foul because the examiner never entered a rejection that didn't include Zoo.
He didn't enter a rejection that included Zoo.
And then he came back and he put Zoo in at the end, right?
But what happened was he started off with...
I can't pronounce the name of it.
Yeah, he started off with JP2. He started off with what I believe to be the presiding judge's question, was the three elements of the prior art. He started off with JP234, which shows the basic magnet, Young.
And this question about 9051 on plastics came up, and the examiner cited something, can't pronounce the name of it.
Berenska,
that's right. And you traversed that. And
correct.
So that's crazy because you didn't understand it. That doesn't apply to plastics.
Mm-hmm.
And you won. And so then he stuck Zoo in.
That's correct.
So what I'm trying to say is, and you're saying, well, what's happening here is that the solicitor doesn't want to talk about Zoo because it's sort of embarrassing. So isn't that your argument, that the solicitor's asking us to affirm the board on a ground other than the board used for its rejection? Am I missing something?
I think actually affirming the board on a ground that was not its rejection is improper. Because this is not an issue where there was some minor error in the thing or in the rejection. What you actually would be reverting to is essentially, my view of the solicitor's position is, okay, even if you ignore Zoo in this admitted prior art issue, you really end up going back to the first three references. And that's something, if you look at what we're talking about is a harmless error analysis. The question is, would the outcome have been different? And the only thing that the record shows us is yes, because the examiner withdrew that rejection. It would be unfair to enter a rejection, essentially, what the decision would be, that is inconsistent with the office's very own outcome. So the one other prong, actually, if I may, on Zoo, because there was a two-part test, and I don't believe I actually said the second part, was for it to be considered an analogous prior art, and scope of the prior art is something that's considered under the Graham factors. The Supreme Court's KSR case never changed Graham's requirement to consider the scope of the prior art, is that the reference must be reasonably pertinent to the problem with which the inventor was involved. Here, Mr. Rivera, Mr. Neuberger were trying to figure out how to keep the backside of the magnet from sticking to the adhesive when it was rolled up without the use of a separate release liner.
That doesn't sound like a scope issue. It sounds like an analogous art issue.
Analogous art issue,
which
right.
The Supreme Court did say you can't be too strict on that.
Right. Well, I always viewed the scope of the prior art as determining what prior art would be considered by the inventor, and that's the wrong of it I was referring to, not the actual teaching of the art itself. What I am talking about is the analogous art test. Well, optical waveguides, they don't roll up. They don't have a release layer. They don't have an adhesive that really sticks to anything that is a release layer, and they don't have layers that separate from one another. So if one were considering the problem that Mr. Rivera was facing, certainly an optical waveguide is not the place that one would consider anyone to have actually considered or dealt with a problem, or even a problem that's remotely like that. So for that, those basic reasons, we're submitting that Zhu cannot be relied on as an analogous reference. I see that I'm into my rebuttal time, and I don't want to run over.
We'll save it for you.
Oh, great, thank you very much.
Mr. Johnson.
May it please the court. It's undisputed that the claimed inventions are all part of the prior art that's found in JP 234, Jung, and Sartimer. Mr. Rivera argues that Sartimer only recommends use on a metal substrate. However, Sartimer itself discloses that it can be applied to various types of substrates, including plastic, metals, and other types of substrates. There's nothing in Sartimer itself that says that it cannot be applied to non-metals. And what unfortunately is
going to be... Right, but the final office action that resulted in the appeal to the board wasn't a rejection of 234 Young and Sartimer. It was Zhu.
It also included Zhu,
okay,
that's correct.
So if Zhu is wrong, if it's wrong to consider Zhu, then doesn't the board decision fall?
No, it does not, and we disagree that it was wrong to consider Zhu.
Well, I know, but let's just work through it. Let's assume we take Zhu out. We say, well, you can't tax Zhu as an admission by the applicant. We think that's wrong, and it's not anywhere near the prior art, the relevant field, so you throw Zhu out. Wouldn't we have to remand, do something else? I mean, that's the rejection, right? That was what was affirmed by the board.
Mm-hmm. When you look at the actual rejection, you see that Zhu was only applied, was only relied upon as further evidence that Sartimer could be applied to non-metals.
In other words, you're saying Zhu isn't even necessary.
That's correct.
The language was exactly as evidenced by. Aren't those the exact words?
Those were the exact words, Your Honor. So it was merely evidence that confirmed the teachings that were found in Sartimer itself. So it's our position that that Zhu was only relied upon for this.
As evidenced by was the examiner's language, right?
That's right.
That's not the board's language.
That is not. And if you're looking for it, that could be found at 887, I believe, Your Honor.
Well, I'm looking at the board decision at page A, bunch of 07. It says, Zhu teaches it's a promoter useful for plastic substrates. And that kind of language, teaches, that's the kind of language you use when you're referring to prior art, right?
That's correct, Your Honor.
As opposed to confirming something that's in somebody else's prior art.
It is, and yet when you look at what the examiner was getting at, it was really to show that it was merely further confirmation as to what the teaching was.
But the board was piling on.
In some sense...
Sartimer teaches adhesion-promoting products.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Right.
That's correct. And so all that the agency was doing was merely relying upon it to confirm what Sartimer ultimately teaches. And with respect to Zhu being not analogous art, it's really Sartimer that we're looking at. Sartimer was the analogous art, and again, Zhu was merely being relied upon to confirm the teachings that were found in and Sartimer itself. And as I briefly touched on,
But you maintain in your brief, do you not, that Zhu is pertinent prior art and could be used as prior art? Don't you say that in your brief?
That's correct.
But if we gave you that, I mean, my goodness, that's manna from heaven. I mean, you can take something that's found in aerospace prior art and apply it to making bird feeders, mm-hmm. right? If we were to rule that way. Mm-hmm.
That'd be
a terrible mistake, wouldn't it?
Well, I don't think so. If you consider it to be an artful language...
Aerospace art to somebody who's working on bird feeders?
I'm sorry?
Aerospace art to someone mm-hmm. who works in bird feeders? You're going to mm-hmm. tax one of ordinary skill in the art of making bird feeders with the knowledge of what Boeing does?
Right, but you have to look at the reason why Zhu was actually cited in the first place, which was merely to confirm that CD 9051 could be used in a way that was different from...
Did you have the examiner's final office action on deals with Zhu at your fingertips?
Yes, that's at 887, Your Honor.
Are you saying that an adhesion promoter is an adhesion promoter wherever it's used? And if one wants an adhesion promoter, mm-hmm. whether it's used for a Boeing 707 or a birdcage, it's an adhesion promoter.
That's right. It's going to function in the same way. And that's what's going on here, where Rivera was merely gathering together known elements and having them perform in the same way that they've been known to perform. And under KSR, that makes his combination obvious. And that's part of the problem that the board and the examiner pointed out in their rejection.
Your adversary mentioned that in a passing way, but it's part of important part of his argument, a teach away point on one of the references?
Yes, Your Honor.
What's your response to that?
I believe his teaching away argument was with respect to Sartimer and it only recommending its use on metals.
I thought it was Jung.
No, I thought it was Jung.
Yeah, I didn't hear that during his opening discussion.
No, but it was in his brief.
Yes. Yes, Your Honor. With respect to Jung does not teach away. He argues that Jung teaches a high unwind force. However, there's no language at all in Jung that discloses that it teaches a high unwind force. What it states is that if the unwind force is too high, then the release layer could stick to the adhesive layer. And if the unwinding force...
So Jung says if it's too high, it's not good. If it's too low, it's not good. So you have to sort of dial it in where you need it. Right?
That's correct. And there's express language in Jung that says it was known to use the release layer to decrease the unwind force and to adjust the unwind force. So one of ordinary skill in the art reading that language would know that...
Now you say not only doesn't teach away, it teaches too.
It teaches too to make the release layer at an optimum level for the particular needs of the user. So there is no teaching away that's found in Jung at all. It teaches as you just mentioned.
You discount the secondary considerations on the ground that it's either just attorney argument or it's unsubstantiated. In the patent office, what's an applicant to do? How does an applicant present secondary considerations in such a way that the patent office would say, at least we have to consider it? I mean, here you had the inventor. Was the inventor testifying that he thought there was a long-felt need?
Yes, Your Honor.
Well, why isn't that good enough? He's one of ordinary skill in the art, isn't he?
Well, I just want to back up for just a moment. The board did consider the secondary considerations, but they found it to be unpersuasive.
Essentially because it was unsubstantiated, it was vague, it was almost like it didn't qualify under Sir Daubert. It's not good evidence, right?
Right. Well, there are a number of ways that secondary considerations can be proven. One is by submitting an affidavit showing whatever it is that's being alleged by an objective third party. An objective third party, exactly, Your Honor.
So you're saying if it comes out of the mouth of the applicant, it's more easily dismissed?
Well, it goes to the weight. It goes to the weight in which the evidence is ultimately given. And here, what Mr. Rivera is arguing that he was the first to come up with a rolled magnetic sheet that doesn't have a release liner. However, that's not true. The JP234 reference, which came out before his application, ultimately taught that. So his argument with respect to his secondary consideration fails based upon the evidence of record. there are no further questions, then I will.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Mr. Collins has a little rebuttal time.
Thank you very much. The one question I would like to address shortly on the zoo issue is when it's being considered in the rejection. I think I've already stated our position that we believe it must. That's the rejection that's being considered. And the language of the board was very clear that it was part of the rejection. I mean, you cited it correctly that it's teaching.
But even so, an adhesion promoter is an adhesion promoter. If one wants an adhesion promoter, there are people who deal with materials that adhere, who would know of adhesion promoters even if they've been disclosed for other purposes.
Well, the adhesion promoters in Young, what the adhesion enhancer in Sartimer is being used is to drive some of the cross-linking functionality in the adhesion promoter. It's actually not the adhesion. It's not the adhesion promoter. It's the adhesion enhancer. And it's really designed for other things. And that kind of gets into the Young issue. Young's system is designed for really what are exactly high unwind force applications, packing tape, packaging, very tense forces. And it's actually something that doesn't readily stay on magnets. That was the problem. So finding the solution was very difficult. That actually leads into this long-felt need issue. And I think it was mischaracterized that Ray Rivera said, I'm the first one who sat down and had a self-wound one, that, this first one that worked is what he was saying, because the problem was.
But long-felt need, that was just his opinion.
No, what he was saying
he
is...
He wasn't presenting data, well, or he wasn't presenting an affidavit from an outside person knowledgeable in the field.
Well,
just argument.
No, I think that's an unfair characterization, because his point on long-felt need is a negative. He says, I've been in this field for 20 years. I'm aware 40 to 50 years of these magnets being out there. And I can tell you that the paper is a waste. It's no benefit to the end user. It requires additional manufacturing complexity to roll it up, and it costs money. For 40 to 50 years, people have been unnecessarily spending money on that because they didn't have a solution like
I did. Is the product that your client had in mind the sort of role that obviously they want me to cut it up and stick a picture of my grandson on and put it on my icebox?
Sure.
And so is what they're selling a roll of this stuff?
Yeah.
And then you have your own little machine to cut it?
It's a roll, and frankly, they have a laminator, you put it in, and it's got a film on it.
But if you, for example, assume they were the size of this little pad of, stickies,
mm-hmm.
and if you wanted to have, say, six of them in a package and sell them at CVS,
mm-hmm.
then you'd have to put that protective coating on the thing that you claim is a great idea to throw away because it's wasteful, because otherwise they'd stick to each other.
Or in that situation, you could use exactly what you're holding, a strip of removable adhesive. Yeah, like the
you'd have to put something in that is the genius of this invention to get rid of.
But to get rid of the separate piece of paper, and that's the genius of it. And so Mr. Revere, I think he's qualified to say this, and that's kind of the problem is they're saying, well, you didn't prove to us that there's none out there. Well, the problem is there were none out there except for that attempt by GAP-234, which he said, and it's not a matter of opinion, he's an expert in this field, factually, that the approach they use kills the magnet. It destroys its magnetic property. So they tried, and the GAP-234 inventors fell flat on their face, and what he said is his is the first workable and available, and that's much different than the first attempt. And if you have no more questions, that would conclude the presentation.
Thank you very much, Mr. Collins.
Thank you very much.
Take the case under advisement.
All rise. The Honorable Court is adjourned from day to day.